Kate from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull, how are you, sir? This is the first episode after, well, not the first, the second after episode.
Oh, we're getting off to a great start.
Yes.
It's the first episode. No, wait, not the first. Oh, no, the second. No, okay.
Oh, well, I was going to say it's the first episode after the season ended, but that's not true. There's the second.
Yeah, well, we do our season in review, and then we move on to, like, whatever the heck we want for the summer.
So. Right, so this is the first episode of the summer. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, it's the first episode of our summer season where we can just do whatever the F we want.
That's right.
Which is kind of fun. So it's, we can.
It's a summer school episode, baby. Let's slack off, bro.
Yeah, we're not like those lazy SNL actors who take the whole summer off from the show. No, we keep on rolling with the podcast.
The SNL actors out there just laying about on some sunny beach or on a yacht, just having all types of fun and drinking wine and partying with the social elites. Not us.
Yeah.
We're out here in the SNL, in the coal mines of SNL, just mining for comedy gold and entertainment for you people.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
We're the working man podcast. Yeah.
That's maybe just a nice way to say, like, unsuccessful.
But. Well, okay. All right. Yeah, you can say that too. That's another word to use. I like to use the word hardworking and salt of the earth.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That works too.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. We decided today to talk about this documentary here, like a latest documentary come out about the great Martin Short. So we're talking about the Netflix documentary Marty, Life is Short, directed by Lawrence Kasdan, director of The Big Chill, Silverado, and The Accidental Tourist. And when I first heard his name, I was like, Lawrence.
And Body Heat.
Body Heat. Yeah. Yeah, so like when I first heard this, I was like, Lawrence Kasdan, what does he have to do with Martin Short? And then they explain it in the doc.
They go back. They're buddies.
They're buddies. Friends.
It's kind of like how Rob Reiner made that documentary about Albert Brooks a year or two ago. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't realize, that's one thing about this documentary. I didn't realize how many people Martin Short like knows. He seems to be friends with like half of Hollywood.
He's been around for so long, and for like 40 odd years. And he seems like a very personable guy, and he seems like a very well loved guy.
Yeah.
So, the doc opens up with footage from like Christmas of 1992. And we've got in the first few minutes of the doc, we see Tom Hanks, Eugene Levy, Dave Thomas, Catherine O'Hara, Steve Martin. I mean, it's just a murderer's row of people.
Yeah, there's like Joe Flaherty pops in. And like that's like kind of the main through line of this. There's a lot of home movie, home video footage throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of this doc takes place at Marty's house. And he seems to be like pretty well known for throwing these huge parties at his house. Like there are so many parties that happen at Marty's parties. So many parties happening at his house.
Yeah.
And they all look awesome. They're all like, wow, I want to be at this party. This looks rad.
They do look very cool. I mean, he's obviously like a very extroverted guy. I mean, Steve Martin says early in the documentary, like, if you're having a party and you invite Marty and you find out that Marty can't come, you cancel the party.
Yeah.
Which, wow. What a testament.
Yeah. No, because he is the party. He's like... I mean, he's just like this very outgoing, gregarious, joyful man. I mean, in the movie, they talk about, of course, the tragedies in his life and whatnot and how he's able to overcome them. But, we all know Martin Short, and we all love Martin Short. So we all know how great and amazing he is. Like, I kind of thought about it for a while, and it really kind of dawned on me that, like, he's, like, one of the few comedic actors that I know of that, like, every generation likes. Like boomers like Martin Short, Gen X likes Martin Short, Gen Z, millennials, like everybody. I don't know too many comedic actors that can do that, like somebody in their 50s like him and somebody in their 20s like him. Like Martin Short is just beloved by everybody, you know, except for that one jag-off that wrote that article a few years back.
Refresh my memory on that article. That sounds like, vaguely familiar, but I don't remember.
It was like, don't you remember? It was like some article. Yeah, some article writing saying like, oh, Martin Short's kind of overrated or whatever. And then like all the entire internet rained down on this guy.
Yeah, saying, I sort of remember that. Yeah. And I think I kind of expunged that from my memory because it was so stupid.
As you should. As you should. And like everybody came to that, to Martin's defense. Everybody's like, no, Martin Short's awesome. Everybody, Martin Short's fantastic. Everybody loves Martin Short. Like, you suck. You suck.
Martin Short's fantastic. You suck, sir. You suck. I'm assuming it was a sir, right?
It's got to be. It was a dude, right?
Oh, I mean, if there's someone with a horribly awful take, it's usually a dude.
Yeah, it's usually dudes saying dumb shit like that.
Yeah.
And I say this as a dude. We say a lot of
dudes. I mean, not us. We are like the two dudes who have demonstrably correct takes about everything.
Yes, we're the correct dudes. Indeed.
Yes.
Absolutely. But yeah, then this doc kind of delves into his childhood a little bit. You know, he's the youngest of five, of course, a proud Canadian. They talk about his brother. I had no idea. This was new to me. Like, I didn't know his brother, Michael, was a comedy writer and had, and he wrote on SCTV and he won Emmys for writing on Schitt's Creek. He was a producer on Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, he's a Golden Globe winner. He's collaborated with Martin Short on a lot of things that he's done over the course of his career. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I mean, because Short is such a common name, you wouldn't immediately make that association. It's like, oh, he must be related to Martin Short.
But no, I thought that's kind of cool. He's like, it's almost like his brother is like the Peter Aykroyd to Martin's Dan. In a way.
Genius.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, hey.
I mean, do you want to continue that analogy through like Bill Murray's brother and Mike Myers' brother and John Belushi's brother?
I feel like you already did that.
Okay.
So done.
Okay.
Very nice. And they talk about his family. They talk about his dad, Charles Short, who is a very funny, sarcastic man, a bit of a drinker, enjoyed his liquor. And they also get into how Marty was like from a very early age, just really good at telling jokes and performing. And he seemed to have this confidence at a young age, just like, doing Sinatra songs as a kid in his room. And it's like, wow.
He was so obviously like a born performer from early on. He's doing fake variety shows by himself up in his room. And then it was like, he gets called down to dinner and he goes down and has dinner and then goes back up. And yet he's like, he's in pre-med in school and then he switched to social work.
Wow. Yeah. That's.
And he finally like, that's, and he's doing like community theater and stuff. And finally it's like, oh, hey, maybe I should pursue this as a career.
Yeah, like when he said he was in pre-med, I was like, pre-med? What? Yeah. Nothing you've told me in this doc so far have showed me that you had an interest in pre-med.
I mean, maybe it was just that his generation is like, you have to have a stable career and people are always going to need doctors or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Maybe it's that.
He never did theater in high school. He also mentioned that he met his good friend Eugene Levy back in 1970 at McMaster University. And I think Eugene Levy's even on a record saying like, yeah, Martin Short's my best friend. I've known him forever.
Yeah, they both say they're each other's best friends. And I was like, wow, I would have bet money that Steve Martin was Marty Short's best friend because they've just done so much stuff together over the years. I'm like, why are you working with Eugene Levy more?
Yeah, that is true. They've on SCTV, of course, they've worked together, but yeah, they haven't been in like a lot of movies together.
I just don't think of them as a double act the way I do Martin Short and Steve Martin because they've done so much together from like Three Amigos to Father of the Bride to Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah.
Not that Eugene Levy is a bad choice to have a best friend. I would love to be best friends with Eugene Levy, but
yeah, Eugene's great.
Just surprised me slightly.
Yeah, no. Hey, my Eugene Levy impression. Oh, thank you.
That's good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I can see the eyebrows.
Yes. Oh.
By the way, you also get to like monitor the growth of Eugene Levy's eyebrows over the years.
Yes. Start up. They go from inchworms to caterpillars as the years go on.
It as well. But I mean, and they talk about like, so after Marty Short finally kind of surrenders and gets into the performing arts, he's in this famous production of Godspell where it was like him and Andrea Martin and Victor Garber and Paul Schaefer was a piano player
Damn.
and like so many people who went on to SCTV and other stuff. And like if I ever got a time machine, one of the things I would do is go back to, I think it's like 1979, to see this production of Godspell because it must have been amazing. Oh,
I
and
mean,
Gilda Radner. Did I mention Gilda Radner? She's in it.
SNL connection, Gilda Radner, Jane
Yeah.
Eastwood, Catherine O'Hara was there too, Dave Thomas. I
Yeah.
mean, John Candy, I believe, was in his. Yeah, this is like,
It's
this is.
just practically everyone from this production of Godspell went on to great success in the comedy world.
I mean, yeah,
And
it's fantastic.
like Eugene Levy introduced Marty to Andrea Martin. Andrea Martin dated Gilda Radner for a while, and he was like, well, everyone fell in love with Gilda. And like because it's like young actors in the late 70s, like everybody hooked up with everybody else at some point.
It was a better time.
He was, yeah, because it's, we're
Yeah.
still in like the sort of the sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s. AIDS isn't a thing yet, so
Yeah, I mean, it
yeah,
sounded
maybe.
I mean, it sounded cool, like when they were talking about the parties they would have, like because Eugene and Martin were roommates, and everybody would just come to their house and hang out. That it just sounds like a really cool hang, just like a bunch of theater kids just getting drunk off of
Getting
Merlot,
drunk, hooking up.
like singing show tunes. I mean, my God, that's the life for me.
And then Marty Short falls in love with Gilda Radner's understudy. He like breaks up with Gilda, and then he goes to a bar and he happens to like he run into Nancy Dolman, and she had just broken up with her partner. And they just
Well,
kind of, they just kind of hooked up and got together and
well. Yeah, and they've been together for so many years. For the it's pretty insane, like how long they've been together. It's beautiful. It's beautiful too.
Yeah, it is. And like Catherine O'Hara is talking about, like, at one point she was going through a rough patch in her marriage with her husband, and she went to a marriage counselor, and the marriage counselor was like, okay, well, is there like a relationship that you want to emulate in your marriage? And she said, Marty and Nancy. And the therapist said, like, I've heard that from so many people.
Yeah, like I will say this about the doc. I do like how the focus they placed on Nancy and how important she was to Martin and their family and how she really was like the rock, like the solid foundation that kind of kept Marty tethered and everybody tethered, because like throughout the doc everybody was like, yeah, we would just kind of do what Nancy would say to do. She was like kind of the den mother, and like we all kind of look after, we looked up to her, and we kind of maybe idolized her a little bit. And we were all like, she was like so cool and down to earth and nice and sweet, and like we really like kind of looked up to her. It was very sweet.
And like another interesting point that they made is like Martin Short sort of made the point that like when you were an actor in Canada at that point in time, you kind of did everything there was to do in entertainment. You sang, you danced, you did theater, you did public access television, you did this, you did that, and you just kind of bounced all around. So you became like a very versatile performer.
Yeah. Jack of
And
all
it's not
trades, some would say.
As segmented as the American entertainment industry, I think.
Yeah.
So, and he said, and then Second City was starting up in Toronto around this time, like the sister city to Chicago. And Martin Short says, like, oh yeah, I didn't want to audition. He was like, I wanted to be Sinatra, and I didn't want to be funny on demand.
But he
So
is
it's
funny
like,
on command. I don't understand that part. I never
yeah.
got. I was like, yeah, but you're like funny, like you are kind of funny on command at like parties and stuff. So just do that in front of a camera or in front of an audience, man. But
I don't know, maybe it just came so easily to him, he didn't realize. Like, maybe it didn't feel like the thing he should do. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, you should sweat a little more.
I guess. I don't know.
But it seems so obvious in retrospect. It's like, yes, you are a comedic actor. This is what you should do, Martin Short. But
you should do comedic acting, Martin Short. But yeah, so Martin and Nancy were still together. Martin was still trying to figure out his life. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. Nancy got a record deal out in L.A. So she and Marty moved out there, and she got on primetime TV, and she was doing stuff and getting gigs and getting all these opportunities. And Marty was just kind of directionless. He's like, "Oh, what do I do with my life now? All my friends seem to be eclipsing me." And I'm just
and he was like kind of in a funk. He was like, "Oh yeah, I hadn't worked in 2 months. I was in a funk." And then he finally decided, "I think I want to go to Second City." And, you know, because that's where all his friends were. And he talked about how he developed the character of Ed Grimley.
Mm.
And like the hairstyle, he was like moosing up his hair. And like one of the actors was like, "Oh, your hair's getting really pointy." So like one night he just put it into this almost a unicorn horn just to crack up this other actor in the cast. And that became the character.
Yeah. Like in like that Bob's Big Boy, Ace Ventura. Mm-hmm. Type of hairdo.
And he says, like, the shirt for Ed Grimley is like a shirt that he wore in 11th grade.
Nice. Classic.
Yeah. And he just kind of bounced around. He was doing, like, the Second City live shows. He had a guest spot on the sitcom Taxi. Mm. And then finally he joins SCTV a few seasons in. And he's like, "Oh, I was just on fire with creativity there."
They were great. I mean, he was there with all his friends that he knew from, you know, acting mm-hmm. and whatnot. His right. brother was writing there. Andrea Martin became his sister-in-law, actually.
So right, because she married Nancy's brother, Bob. So
yes.
Andrea Martin, I guess, is his sister-in-law by marriage.
Yeah.
I think that's how that works, so...
Yeah, yeah, and SCTV was really taking off. I did like some of the clips they showed. Like, I kind of remembered where they did like the battle of the PBS stars, where mm-hmm. it was Julia Child against Mr. Rogers in a boxing match.
Yeah,
and like I think John Candy was Julia and Martin was Mr. Rogers. I remember that as a kid and thinking it was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, and so there's a lot of SCTV clips. He's also talking around the same time he and Nancy are starting to try and have kids, but they were having trouble conceiving or having trouble getting pregnant. And like Nancy goes on some sort of hormones or meds to, you know, make it easier. And apparently it was just wreaking havoc with her moods and stuff. And so he was finally like, "Okay, we're getting off the medicine. We're just going to adopt."
Yeah. Cause I think they found out Nancy had endometriosis and she was, mm-hmm. so like pregnancy was an issue. So yeah, they ended up adopting three kids, and Marty loved being a dad to all these kids. It was, yeah. And you get to see some really great like home movie footage of like how he's genuinely enjoys these kids and mm-hmm. nurtures them and loves being silly and the, you know, just basically a big goofy dad type. It's very wholesome. It's very sweet. It's like, "Oh, I want Martin Short. Will you be my dad?"
Yeah. And he talks about how, like, you know, "I would have stayed on SCTV forever, but it was canceled." And then, like, right after that, he's invited to join SNL. Which is a show we've covered a bit.
On this
podcast.
Yeah, I've heard of it. But that's wild that SCTV got canceled, because like they were winning Emmys and shit. Like it was a big deal. So I'm not sure why.
It ran for what, like 5 years, something like that.
I don't know. Like after 5 years, you're like, "All right, get out of here with you and your Emmys." What?
I don't know. Yeah, corporate bosses are dumb.
They really are. They're not smart like us podcasters.
Yeah, they're dumb and they're getting dumber with each passing moment.
Dumb, dumb, dummity, dumb, dumb.
Dumb and more evil.
Comma, dumb, doobie, doo, dumb, dumb.
So he goes to SNL. He like the first thing he does there pretty much is the synchronized swimming sketch with Harry Shearer, which if you've watched any sort of SNL retrospective, you've seen at least a few seconds of this sketch.
"I can't swim."
Yeah. he can't swim. So, no, I'm so not, you know, it's going to be really difficult for us to get into the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm not 88. I'm not a strong swimmer.
Yeah.
Oh my God! You've seen it, like
you know. Yeah. They make the point early on, like Steve Martin, I think, made the point early on that like Marty Short has some, all his characters are so extreme and bizarre, but he still makes them feel kind of real, you know?
Yeah, like I mean, I think the other probably most well-known character he did at SNL was the Nathan Thurm character, mm-hmm. who's like the who's like very defensive. I think it's like a
he was on like a 60 Minutes piece. And like Mike Wallace was grilling him, and he was like, "I know that. Don't you think I know that? It's so funny that you think I know that." Yeah,
well, I would know that, of course.
And he reveals that that character was kind of based on his makeup lady at SNL.
Yeah, Marion Siebert, who was like mm-hmm. extremely defensive, and mm-hmm. like you know was always afraid, and like as he was doing it, he was always afraid that like the makeup artist would catch on to him and like. Call mm-hmm. him out on it, but she never did until the very end of the season after he left or as right, he was leaving.
Yeah, it was like somebody got drunk and they were like, "Don't you realize this is you?"
Of course I know that. Don't you think I know that? Of course I know that. Why would I know
something? I think I remember some cartoonist saying in an interview. It might have been Scott Adams, the guy who did Dilbert, who said like, "If you switch the gender on the person you're parodying, nobody ever makes the connection."
Interesting.
Yeah, because like you know, you don't think like, oh, you know, that woman is based on me. You're like, that's what a weird thing to think. It was like, no, that can't be me. I'm this gender. It can't be that gender.
No, that's a man being an asshole.
That's a man, baby.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
But so, yeah, so he's very successful on SNL, but he's getting kind of burned out and he asks to leave like after a year. He comes to Dick Ebersol, who was producing the show at that time. And like early in the season, he's like, oh, I don't think this is working out. I think, you know, this is too much of a grind. I think I gotta quit the show. And Dick Ebersol is like, well, stick around till Christmas and see if you still feel that way. And Dick Ebersol kind of shrewdly knew, If I get him to stay around after Christmas, he'll be like kind of over the hump. So, and he'll stick around for a whole season, which is what happened.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Yeah,
he got him. But yeah, but like soon enough, Martin Short did get kind of burnt out mm-hmm. of the show. He was there from 84 to 85, and mm-hmm. He basically says. Yeah, like with SNL, you do get burnt out really quickly and you're not able to see your family as much. And the show takes away all your concentration and it's just, it's not how you want it.
It's wild to think that he was only on SNL for a season as a regular. I know he's come back and hosted a number of times and all that, but he casts a long shadow on the show considering how briefly he was on it.
He really does. Like he's one of those cast members that like he's done a lot. Like we said, like I mean, he had Ed Grimley, he had Nathan Thurm, synchronized.
He did
swimmer.
His Katharine Hepburn impression.
Yes, relatives of the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Which I think that show. I don't even know if younger people even remember that show anymore with Robin Leach.
With Robin Leach, yeah.
But yeah, like,
well, you know, actually Robin Leach's name was in the Epstein files, I think. So a bit more, notability, I guess is the word. I don't want to say cachet or anything like that, but his name's out there. Again.
He's back, baby. It's comeback. This is his comeback moment.
I mean, he's been dead for quite some time, but
what?
Yeah.
Oh, R.I.P. Robin?
He was in the Epstein files, so that's F-U-C-K-H-I-M.
Yes, F-U-C-K-H-I-M, Robin Leach. Rest in piss.
Yes.
Wow. All right.
Anyway, yeah, so Martin Short, after he leaves SNL, he has some great tragedy in his life after that. Like, his oldest brother is killed in an accident, and he says, like, at the funeral, his mom started coughing and then that turned out to be cancer. And then she was supposed to live only had like 3 months to live, but then somehow it went into remission, and then she lived for another 2 years. And then when his mom dies, his dad's health starts going downhill. And Martin Short, I think, actually says, "We had a speed dial to the funeral parlor."
Which yeah,
it's a great dark joke.
Very much so. Yeah, he basically says, I think it's he was on Tom Schneider saying, "Yeah, I lost my brother when I was 12. I lost my mom when I was 18. And I lost my dad at 20. Which, damn.
Yeah, okay, so this didn't happen after SNL. This was just the point in the documentary it came up in.
Yeah, yeah, like this is the point where they talk about more about his family and his upbringing in Canada. His mom was the concert mistress of the Hamilton Philharmonic Orchestra, which concert mistress, I don't think I've ever heard of that term.
But, me neither.
Okay. No. But yeah, like, you know, it said like my mom was very nice, sweet and kind, kind of balanced out his dad's energy. He was a little bit more acerbic. And unfortunately, his older brother, David, died in an accident and mom got cancer. And yeah, the dad had arteriosclerosis.
Sclerosis, I think it was.
Yeah, because he was also a heavy smoker and drinker. And he got some strokes. And
you know, this is something I've been thinking lately is it seems like so many people who are just wildly successful in comedy, a lot of them have like these great tragedies early in their lives. And I think you have to develop like a deeper reservoir of humor to kind of deal with that and overcome it.
Mm.
Like I recently got Molly Shannon's autobiography, Hello, Molly.
Mm.
And like the first thing she talks about in there is her mother and her sister dying in a car accident that she was in.
Yes, I remember talking about that.
Yeah, and like and like Stephen Colbert, his father and I think several of his brothers died in a plane crash.
Yeah,
when he was fairly young.
Yeah, they did.
And you know, like this with Marty, I hear it so often. I really think that there might be some sort of connection. Is that gives you a drive that you have? Like I remember, like Taylor Tomlinson is like one of the most successful stand-ups today. She has a joke about she's like, "You think I would have these Netflix specials if my mom had lived past me being 8?" And I mean, I really do think it gives you like an extra drive or an extra something to that you have to do that.
Yeah, you know? that does. I mean, I have heard that, like people say, you know, to be a great comedian, you need to overcome some huge adversity or have some, you know, big tragedy in your life. You know, it's almost sort of the same. It's like akin to if you want to be a great musician or any type of artist, you have to have some sort of pain or like something happen in your life to kind of take you to that next level. I mean, I don't know. I sometimes I do understand it. Sometimes I don't know. I don't know fully know if I agree, but then I see, I don't know. There's like a lot of evidence kind of pointing to the fact that, yeah, that there is some, there is some truth to from pain or from, you know, adversity comes great art.
But I mean, Marty Short's default seems to be very joyful. He seems to just be happy as his norm, you know.
Yeah.
That seems to be where his normal levels are set. So even though he's had a lot of this, and you know, it unfortunately has continued into very recent years as well.
But Martin says he's maintaining. He tries to maintain the merry theme of life. That seems to be the mantra he goes by. Like, not like, you know, it's like this part in the doc, you know, the interviewer that has asked him about how he's able to dealt with all this loss. And he kind of says, well, you know, the best way to honor these people's lives is to, you know, have joy and, you know, kind of maintain the merry, like, because like they wouldn't want you to sort of be wallowing in your sadness and loss for them. They would want you to celebrate them and, you know, enjoy your life while you still have it, which I think that's a pretty good way to to go about it.
That's a great sentiment.
You know, I mean, of course, you know, whenever anybody leaves your life, you know, of course, the natural default is to be sad, have sorrow for them because, you know, they're no longer in your lives. But at the same time, you do need to show some, you know, maybe, how do I want to say this? Like, you have to sort of celebrate their lives and everything they've done. And, you know, just to celebrate that you had this moment with them, because what is not grief, but love persevering.
Oh, okay. I didn't know we had Paul Bettany here
today. Yeah. Oh God, that quote was pretty fantastic.
It is a great quote. Fantastic quote. Woo! That made that show. Fire. So we're quoting from the WandaVision show. If you don't know that quote was everywhere, so you might have seen that even if you didn't happen to watch that show.
That quote was straight fire, as the kids say. No cap. On God.
So anyway, so we kind of continue on with Marty Short's career. His first movie is Three Amigos, which and he talks about, he's very pretty frank about, like, he bonded with Steve Martin and Chevy Chase in a big way. But the movie wasn't terribly successful and it wasn't terribly well reviewed.
Yeah.
And it opened second to The Golden Child. And apparently, like, if you bring up Three Amigos with him, even years later, he would be like, oh, yeah, but that movie didn't do very well. It opened second to The Golden Child. And I think it was John Mulaney who was like, Marty, nobody cares that it opened second to The Golden Child anymore. Like, because people discovered that movie in other ways since, and they don't care how well it did. They just care if they like the movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, listeners, hey, go back and listen to our Three Amigos episode where we talk about it. Yeah, there is there has been, like, a reappraisal of that movie.
Reappraisal, yeah.
Yeah, like, people love it now, because, like, I do remember seeing this movie a lot on, like, Sunday afternoons coming on Channel 11 or Channel 5 and, like, just laughing my ass off at it. I thought it was hilarious. I still love it. Got it on DVD.
It's cinematic comfort food. It's a very funny movie. And, you know, that was produced by Lorne Michaels. And I think co-written by Lorne Michaels, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Yeah, I think he had a hand in that.
Yeah, because I think it was produced in the tail end of Lorne Michaels' 5-year hiatus from SNL. It was like right before he came back to the show.
But yeah,
so he does.
I dug it, movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he does Three Amigos, doesn't do so hot. He does another movie, Inner Space, which was sort of a riff why am I forgetting the name of that movie? Where they're shrunk down and injected into the person. Fantastic Voyage.
Okay. Oh, and Three Amigos, written by Steve Martin, Lorne Michaels, and Randy Newman.
Okay. So he does Inner Space with Randy Quaid, Meg Ryan, and no one sees it.
Yeah, this is kind of a bit of a ongoing thing, because that is something like I kind of thought about as you know, when we talk about Martin Short's career, like, oh, he's been in a lot of movies that didn't quite do very well at the box office. So I was wondering how they were going to address that.
Well, I mean, he says, I think early on in the doc, he's like, 80% of things don't work. But if you just keep going, you eventually get enough good things that, I mean, I think more favorably of Martin Short's career than unfavorably.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, every time I see, like, a Martin Short movie, I like him in it, even though maybe the movie itself is, you know, depending on what it is, like, maybe not that great, but he's always shines in it. And then they also talk about the movie Cross My Heart, which Lawrence Kasdan,
the romantic comedy, does with Annette O'Toole.
Yeah, which I've never even heard of that movie, but, like, Lawrence Kasdan was a producer on it, and that's how we got to know Lawrence Kasdan.
Right.
And
I've heard of that movie. I know it's like a romantic comedy between them, but I've never seen it. And I'm curious. I'd like to check that out because I like him and I like Annette O'Toole, so.
Yeah,
I'd like to see what that's about.
But there was also another thing I had no idea, that Martin Short has a Tony. My man was on Broadway. or with Bernadette Peters in something called Little Me, and he won himself a Tony.
Well, he also did. No, I thought it was he was Bernadette Peters in Little Me because he did the Goodbye Girl with Bernadette Peters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
my mistake. All right, I thought okay. I thought he won the Tony for Little Me though.
Okay. All right.
So yeah. But either way,
yeah, I didn't look up the details on Little Me. I was just taking notes on this.
Okay.
But yeah, he did The Goodbye Girl, which is based on the movie with Richard Dreyfuss and I'm blanking on the actress's name in the movie. She was married to to Neil Simon, Marsha Mason.
Okay.
And great, great movie if you've never seen The Goodbye Girl. And they did a musical version of that. That wasn't terribly successful. I don't remember it lasting very long, but I think he got good notices in it. And he was in The Producers. He took over from Matthew Broderick in The Producers.
Nice. Yeah.
They left for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and people forget, like, I mean, he sings a lot in a lot of his performances, but I still feel like he doesn't get the props he deserves for being a very good singer.
Yeah.
Like, my man's got pipes.
I think if you're like a comedic actor, people just don't expect you to sing, or they don't pay attention to if you sing well. They just look at you as a comedian.
Yeah.
So
it's like, oh, look, the clown can sing. Hmm.
And one of his movies that did pretty well was Father of the Bride, where he is reunited with Steve Martin from Three Amigos, and he plays this wedding planner, Frank, who's like this very extreme character who has just sort of an impenetrable accent. And the joke was that Diane Keaton and Kimberly Williams can understand him perfectly fine, but Steve Martin can never quite get it.
Yeah, it's like an accent almost like Hank Azaria in The Birdcage. Maybe mixed with a little Balky Bartokomis type of, or even like a little Peter McNichol in Ghostbusters 2, Janosch.
Yeah, so it's one of those foreign accents that, because it's probably like a blending of several different foreign accents, you can't quite place it.
Yeah.
And they talk about how they were kind of figuring out how to moderate the accent in this, and they're having him do like different degrees of the accent in the movie, which is, I mean, that's wild to think in retrospect.
It's like, now, Martin, I love the accent, but people are going to want to understand you. So how can we work this out?
Yeah, but I mean, that movie was successful enough to get a sequel.
It was, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, they did something right.
they go through his other movies, a lot of them didn't do super well, but still have a cult following,
like Clifford with Charles Grodin, where he was playing a 10-year-old child when he's 40.
Wild. Wild, wild, wild.
I've never watched Clifford. Is it good?
I haven't seen it either, but just the concept is, we're just gonna have this 40-year-old man play a child, and we're just not gonna address it at all. Okay.
It's out there.
It's out there. But yeah, like films like Captain Ron and Pure Luck, Three Fugitives. He had a part in Mars Attacks, The Big Picture.
I like Mars Attacks. Mars Attacks is a fun movie.
Ack.
Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a good one. He was doing well. He was chugging along. They bought a cottage in Canada. I think his wife Nancy bought it for him without him seeing it.
Yeah, he hadn't even seen it yet, and then she like buys the house.
Wild.
But apparently worked out okay. And we also get kind of into all his famous friends here. We have Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, and they're like, oh yeah, well our kids were sort of the same age too, so we all hung out a lot. And also, like, Steven Spielberg and Kate Capshaw. It's just, good Lord. Is there no one Marty Short is not friends with?
Kurt Russell shows up with Goldie.
Yeah.
Horn. Yeah. I feel like, as soon as I said Goldie.
Thank you for specifying, because he hangs out with so many Goldies.
Mayor Goldie Wilson. That's what I meant. Mayor
Goldie Wilson. I like the sound of that.
Hey, Marty. Oh, that's hilarious. They also showed this footage of where Martin and Tom Hanks were like recreating the last scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Well, it's not the last scene. They jump into the river.
Oh, right. The last scene is something else. But yeah, the scene where they jump.
Spoilers.
Oops.
But so they're showing home movie footage of Tom Hanks and Martin Short doing like their version of this scene, and they're intercutting it with footage from the actual movie of, like, you know, where Sundance confesses that he can't swim before they're diving off a cliff to escape the authorities, and Paul Newman's like, oh, don't worry, the fall will probably kill you. But they're doing it as Ed Grimley and Forrest Gump, which is just wild.
Just goofing around, just having a big old goof them up, and like they're doing this,
and then they dive off their boat or off their yacht or whatever,
off their yacht. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They're Hollywood people. Do they rent this, or is this a boat that one of them own? We don't get into that. But
yeah, it's somebody's yacht or boat. It could be. I mean, it could be Lauren's, because they do show Lorne Michaels at one of these parties.
It could be Lauren's. It could be Tom Hanks. He's got Forrest Gump money by this point, obviously. So,
hey, Lorne, can we borrow?
Tom Hanks doesn't own a boat. What the hell is the point of it all?
Hey, Lorne, can we borrow your yacht for a minute? We want to shoot a thing.
Yeah.
Just fill it up with gas when you return it. And then we get to what I think is probably Martin Short's greatest creation. It's probably, I think, the best thing he might have ever done. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking Jiminy Glick. Like, I fucking love Jiminy Glick.
So, yeah, he very succinctly explains the concept of Jiminy Glick as he's a bad interviewer who doesn't know much about the person. So he's just going in woefully unprepared. And I think we've all seen celebrity interviewers like this. I mean, for me, like, the go-to is always Larry King, because he was always like, oh, I don't want to know much about the people I interview, because then I won't have that curiosity about them. I'm like, this just sounds like you're lazy and bad at your job, Larry King.
I don't want to study this math test I'm about to take, because I'll lose the curiosity for it.
Exactly. So, like, probably the most famous or infamous Jiminy Glick clip, I think, is he's talking to Mel Brooks around the time that he was doing the musical version of The Producers on Broadway, and he's like, what's your big beef with the Nazis? and he actually takes Mel Brooks by surprise, and it's like, what's my big beef with the Nazis? And he's like, oh, I just think they're bad. And he's like, I guess.
I suppose, yeah, you're right.
Just a brilliant show. And he had a regular show on Comedy Central for a while. And I remember Michael McKean was like the band leader on that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had to play the harp.
I think his name was Abraham Van Voorhees or something like that. and he talked to like two or three different celebrities over the course of an episode. And he interviewed Bill Hader once.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, after you listen to this podcast, if you have not seen the Jiminy Glick Bill Hader interview, I implore you, go watch it. It is just it's like 12 minutes or however long it is of just pure unadulterated comedy joy.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, because Bill Hader is such a great audience. He's such a good laugher. And Jiminy Glick, and it's basically like Martin Short roasting people as he's interviewing them.
Yes. It's like, Bill Hader, that doesn't sound like a leading man name. Sounds like a man who can install inside Windows.
He's like, that's true. And Bill Hader's like agreeing with all the criticism of that.
I like the one where Jiminy Glick, he interviews Steven Spielberg, and he says, you've done so many films. When are you going to do the big one?
Something that really hits.
Something that clicks with the public.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
And everyone's just so taken aback by this.
I mean, Marty said, he came up with the character. He's always been fascinated by morons with power.
Yes. In
his words, that's kind of Jiminy in a nutshell. But yeah, like, guys, go watch Jiminy Glick interviews. Like, whenever I want to have a good laugh and a smile, I put on one of those, and by golly, it always does a trick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Unfortunately, there's some more rough times ahead for Martin Short. At this point, he's around 2007. His wife, Nancy, gets an ovarian cyst, and it develops into cancer. And, yeah. So they're dealing with that. And Martin Short's, like, shooting the TV show Damages around that time. And they show a clip of him just sort of, he's got that, like, thousand-yard stare in a close-up. And it's just, I mean, Damages was, like, a more dramatic show. It wasn't, like, this ultra-comedic show.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
I watched it, like, early on, and I gave up on it pretty quickly, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because, like, I know Martin Short has done a few dramatic roles. Like, they they showed a clip from him in the morning show with Steve Carell. And, like, I mean, you know, that's always interesting to see because, you know, everybody says, like, comedians can transition pretty easily to drama because, like, as you say, you know, their comedy kind of comes from pain and their hardships. So the drama can also come from there as well. But I think the few times I have seen Martin Short do drama, he is very good. It takes you a minute to, like, sort of shake off the Marty you know and accept.
Yeah, because that's kind of your preconception of him. Is he's made you laugh in so many things. It is odd at first to see him in a straight dramatic role.
Yeah, it is like, oh, interesting.
And I guess I should clarify that the reasons I stopped watching Damages had really nothing to do with Marty Short. So,
right, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
It was just like one of the other actors was doing a horrible fake Southern accent, and I can't stand fake Southern accents. So,
was it like too like Foghorn Leghorn? Were like, I say, boy.
Well, it was like,
how much older than Damages going to cost me?
I don't want to put the actor on blast, but it was like somebody I was familiar with, so I knew that wasn't his real speaking voice. And like fake Southern accents are just so grating to me. I was just like, I can't continue with this.
Put him on blast, John. Come on.
No, because I like the actor. He was just bad in this one thing. So
controversy is how we get listens, John. Don't you care about the clicks? Come on.
Well, also, he has a tough name to pronounce. So.
Oh, okay. All right, forget
I'm going to mangle it.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. I see. No, all right, fine. I'm trying to take him. Herb Erbliger.
It's not a guessing game. I didn't say his name for a reason, Darren.
Lachlan Mulchberger.
Sure, it's Lachlan Mulchberger.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, like we said, Nancy, you know, unfortunately contracted cancer from her cyst, and she, you know, sadly, she fought as long as she could, and she unfortunately passed away in 2010. They showed this ABC footage of Steve Martin playing this banjo song that he dedicated to Nancy, and like,
yeah,
that got me because like you see, like, oh yeah, I made this song for my, you know, for my friend Nancy. As he's saying, my friend Nancy who passed away, he's like holding back tears. He gets really choked up, and that I was like, God damn,
that hurt. And it had to be recent enough that it was still getting him. Yeah.
Yeah, I lost. I shed a few tears. That was,
Because
fuck cancer. Fuck cancer.
Yeah, fuck cancer. Big time. Martin Short has a great quote. He says, "Loss is something to negotiate," and you just still have to like navigate your way through life, even if you've suffered this great loss. And yeah, I think there is a lot of truth to that because like you just have to keep on living. You have to keep going forward.
Yeah, it's what the people who we lost would want, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course, Martin kind of after this loss, he kind of threw himself into his work and his kids, and that leads us to his stint on John Mulaney's show. When John Mulaney had that show on Fox.
Yeah,
and he was a part of Mulaney. Mulaney.
Mulaney. And I remember looking forward to that sitcom because you know, I enjoyed John Mulaney. And of course, I'm a fan of Martin Short. And Nassim Pedrad was in it as well.
Yeah. Good and people.
Some really good people in it. But the show just did not work. Which, I mean, it just shows you what a crapshoot creative projects always are, because you can have the greatest people in the world, but sometimes it still just doesn't work. It doesn't for whatever reason. And Mulaney talks about, he says, like, at one point, Martin Short came up to him and he was like, John, this is what show business is. 98% of it is failure.
Yeah. Nothing works then till something works.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a very, very nice philosophy, I think. He doesn't let any of this stuff get him down, it seems like. So.
Yeah. It's both optimistic and realistic at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a good way to be.
But, you know, I think if you've had a career with the longevity of Martin Short, I think it's easier to have that sort of, to be that philosophical about it.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. And, that leads us to now, where now Marty's been kind of busier than he's ever been. Mm-hmm. Only Murders in the Building, which that might be the biggest thing he's, or the most high profile thing he's done in a while.
Because it's a very sustained success. They've done a lot of seasons of that show.
Yeah, and it kind of introduced him to, like, again, a new generation of kids. So, like, this is where probably, like, the Gen Zers would know him. And, like, that old man's funny type of thing.
Because it's him, it's Steve Martin, it's Selena Gomez. And they didn't know Selena Gomez at all. But they hit it off really well with her. And they all seem to be real life friends, and they're showing some behind the scenes footage and
shenanigans.
Meryl Streep's in there, Paul Rudd's in there.
That was season two or three, I forget, where they were all there. They show that Martin was guest hosting for Jimmy Kimmel at one point. Of course, they talk about the Steve Martin, Martin Short tour that they go on, and the two of them toss jabs back and forth, like, hey, you know what I love about touring with Martin Short? No paparazzi.
Yeah. And they talk about how they're similar in that they both want to, like, continue tailoring and crafting a joke. And we see a little of them going back and forth on, like, okay, how do we make this the best it could be, and developing it. And as a comedy nerd, I find that fascinating.
That really inspires me, because, I mean, when you're, I guess, a comedian at that level, but you still care that much about the joke, and you still want it to be the best product you put out. That's, you know, when, yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of people at their level just kind of coast on whatever and then just get by. But, like, when it's like, no, you care about the art so much that you really want to spend time and energy crafting the jokes to be the best they can be. I'm like, wow, that's, I respect that. Salute, sir. Yeah. I salute you, sir.
Yeah. It's really nice to see, because it shows that there really is no limit to getting something better. You can always work to make it better and to work stronger and stuff like that. And they both really seem to care about the product. So, it's nice to see. Tom Hanks had a great quote towards the end. He just said, Marty operates at the speed of joy.
Love it.
And, yeah, that's great. I think that sums it up. They also show, like, Marty's Christmas parties, where it's like he performs and everyone else performs, and Andrea Martin's like, so I have to, like, take vocal lessons for 6 months to get ready for Marty's Christmas party. And I'm just like, it sounds like it may be kind of exhausting to be Martin Short's friend.
He's a lot.
I think I would love to hang out with him, but only in limited doses, because I feel like he would exhaust me.
All right, John.
Yeah.
You can get an invite to Martin Short's Christmas party, but you have to perform some type of, you know, Christmas song, dance, pageantry, whatever, in front of everybody's.
That would probably be my nightmare. I don't know. If I could pick the number, maybe?
Yes, yeah, you could do whatever you want.
Okay, yeah, okay. I'd have to pick something I was comfortable with and knew well. Yeah. I don't feel like they would be a real judgmental crowd, but still.
No.
I
think it's...
You think Spielberg's getting up there and singing songs?
They're singing Santa Baby? Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't know. I mean, I just have trouble seeing Steven Spielberg belting one out.
I don't know. It's a present, a tree for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this is a crowd of people where, as long as you show that you're trying and you're having fun with it. They're not going to be like judging you on like how pitchy you are or anything like that. I think it's all in good fun. It's like fun is the name of the game.
I mean, yes, it's if there's a certain comfort level and a certain acceptance level, I think that can be very fun. If people are going to be judgmental dicks about it, then that is some very much less fun. So
okay, so you're going if we have to do a song?
Oh, I mean, you'd have to go to his Christmas party just for the experience, right?
Yay! Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, John, you and me, we're doing "Run, Run, Rudolph" on a I don't know what instrument can you play, like a recorder or something?
Yeah, the only instrument I've ever played in my life is a recorder.
Nice.
In grade school. Yeah, okay. I don't know. Right. Run, Run, Rudolph would not be my first choice, but okay. You know,
it's the first. I thought it was the funniest Christmas song I could think of at the time.
Okay, all right.
Dominic the Donkey? I don't know. I think so. Run, 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 Rudolph. I think so. But yeah, like those parties, like, out of insane. I think Sally Field was at one of them. I don't know if Tom Hanks bought her. But yeah, those are fantastic. And yeah, then the kind of the doc sort of ends with like some more footage of Martin and his family and just operating at the speed of joy. Eugene Levy saying, yeah, there's nobody faster, smarter, or funnier than my friend Martin. And I kind of have to agree. Martin Short has such a quick wit. He's really like, he's on it.
He's very sharp. Yeah. And he's an excellent roaster too. I mean, I've seen him. I would look forward to seeing him on Conan O'Brien's show and now on Conan's podcast. And he just has so many great zingers. He's like, you know, the amount of plastic surgery you're having, do like 20% more and then stop. Just so funny, so cutting. And yet, I mean, there's still that underlying affection too, which is, which is fun. So,
yeah. So he should be at one of these roast shows. Like,
he would be great. He would be great. I didn't watch that that Kevin Hart roast at all. Did you watch that at all?
No, it didn't.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of those. It just seems like people just being kind of mean to be mean. Like, it's one thing because like roast started off as like friends of yours, you know, lightly roasting you. That comes out of love, to show that they care about you. But like now it's gotten this thing of people who don't know you saying the meanest, horrible shit about you to your face. And it's just, I don't know, just for exposure or.
And it's less fun when it's like total randos. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, ugh, this feels gross. Yuck. No, thank you.
I don't know. I can still enjoy roast if I like the subject, or if I don't like the subject, I have to really, really like the guests. And like, you know, Kevin Hart, I don't have enough interest in to watch a roast on him.
Oh no.
I never bothered with the sports star Nikki Glaser had her big breakout there.
Oh, Tom Brady.
The Tom Brady roast. I didn't bother with that because I don't care about Tom Brady.
As you shouldn't.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, well, hey, that's great. It was such a great thing for Nikki Glaser because I think she's funny and I enjoy her. So
definitely boosted her career.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And I was like, I could watch her segment, but I'm so not a sports person, I probably wouldn't be able to follow up a lot of her jokes. So. So I'll just take people's word for it that it's funny. So.
Making jokes about touchdowns. That's football, right?
Yeah, that's the one with the pointy ends.
Yeah, that's the foosball, if I'm not mistaken.
But it's interesting to see like how everyone has just such affection for Martin Short. And they close the doc. They have a shot of Martin Short's daughter and Catherine O'Hara, because Catherine O'Hara passed away very recently, I'm sure, as they were like putting this doc together. And
in January.
Yeah. And tragically, Martin Short's daughter committed suicide.
Yeah.
Sometime just very recently. So like these weren't things that the doc could cover in any sort of depth, which is, I don't know. Yeah. It feels a little incomplete. because of that, because we know about this very, very recent tragedy in his life.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but both of these things happened.
Yeah.
So recently, I guess they could have just held off on it and just filmed something and added it on to it, but maybe that would have felt more tacked on or something.
Yeah, I don't know. If it were my film, I don't know if I would be like, oh, should we like try to reconceive the film and address this in some fashion, or just do the short tribute that Lawrence Kasdan did? I mean, yeah, I totally get it if it's still too raw to discuss. I know Martin Short, he recently guest starred on, I think it was CBS This Morning.
Yeah.
And he talked about his daughter's death publicly for the first time. And like another thing they didn't touch on at all is that he has apparently he's in a relationship with Meryl Streep now.
Yeah, that didn't come up. I mean, again, maybe that's something he'd rather not talk about.
I think it's just they are both. Well, maybe not they are both, but I think it's fair to say she's probably a pretty private person.
Yeah, so. Meryl Streep, she's not on the socials.
Yeah.
She kind of keeps to herself. She does the work, and then she just kind of...
She does the work. She blows everybody away with her acting. And
And then
that's fine. That's all any celebrity owes us. Anything a celebrity chooses to reveal beyond what they give us in their work, that's fine. That's their choice. But it is not an essential thing, you know?
No. I mean, I do wonder, like, has that become an essential thing in today's Hollywood now, where they're like, oh no, you have to promote this movie. You have to go on Hot Ones and you have to, put something up on your Instagram account and show your house and where you live and show your feet or whatever.
I think it's a much more expected thing. But I don't know if it should be. I don't know if we necessarily gain a lot by.
Yeah. Part of me thinks, I mean, part of me thinks, like, when did this start? I think it started with, like, the Osbournes, when that, like, reality show, like, people were letting cameras into their house, and then that became a huge hit, then, like, every celebrity kind of let cameras into their house, and then, like, kind of...
And I think also, like, even something as recent as COVID, like, we'd see a lot of celebrities appearing on Zoom interviews and stuff, so you, like, kind of get to see some celebrity houses that you might not have ever seen before. So I think there is more of an expectation for it in this age of social media and all that. But
I don't know if it's, I don't know how good it is. Like, I feel like there should be a little bit of a divide between, you know, celebrities and the fan base. And I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it is neat that you can just address a celebrity on their socials or something like that. And sometimes even like have an exchange with them. But on the other hand, that can also be a horrible thing if, like, you or the celebrity is a hideous asshole.
So, yeah. It's like, Meryl Streep, I sent you my phone number. Why don't you call me?
Yeah. Or just like, you know, oh, Meryl. Like, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel has that whole mean tweets segment.
Yeah.
Where it's just like people who have, like, tagged celebrities with these horrible insults. And...
Margot Robbie, why don't you date me? I know. People can get real jerky online.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, so many people just have these weird parasocial relationships with celebrities. It's like,
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
It gets weird.
Oof. Yeah, I don't know. Like, we watch a documentary like this. This is like an hour, 45-minute doc. Do we know Martin Short any better than we would have otherwise? I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I know... You know, I found out facts about him, about his brother and the fact that he won a Tony and stuff.
Right.
But I mean, for the most part, he's pretty much the guy that I kind of always thought he was. Just hilarious, gregarious, super nice and kind, loves his family, has gone through all this adversity and he gets through this adversity using humor and joy and whatnot, and he's kind of come out the other side of it. I learned a few things about him from this documentary. I don't know if I would say I know him any better, but I still enjoyed this doc. I did too.
There's like a lot of home movie stuff in there,
so much.
It's interesting to see a peek into his life. So it's and it prevents the doc from being like all talking heads.
Yeah, for sure. That could be.
Yeah, I mean, actual shots of talking heads, not yes. like David Byrne's old man coming in. Yeah. Although that would be cool too.
This is not my beautiful house. How did I get here? So, Marty, Life is Short. I would recommend it. I would say it's pretty great.
I recommend it. I think I gave it 3.5 stars on Letterboxd.
That's fair enough. I would give it about that. Yeah.
I think that's what 3.5 stars. So.
Yeah. So, streaming on Netflix, go check it out, guys.
Yeah.
Why don't you? And, that's our episode for today. Thanks again for listening, as always, to the podcast. You could follow us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this madness on our YouTube page, non-productive.com. Mm-hmm. You can donate to our Patreon. Mm-hmm. And
also keeping going and you know, the operating costs and all that stuff.
Indeed.
And rate and review us on your podcatcher of choice and tell your friends about the podcast. That really helps us out. And we want to spread the word.
Spread the GD word, for Pete's sake. And as always, you can follow me on all the socials at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And so that's Marty, Life is Short. Mm-hmm. We watched a documentary, Darren.
Well, how about this, John? How about on the next episode, how about we switch things up and watch a documentary?
Ooh, I like that. That's lots of variety. Okay, but I'm going to throw this back at you.
Ooh.
What if we watched a documentary about somebody involved with the production of Saturday Night Live? Just to mix things up.
I'm going to volley this back at you. I'm going to throw it up the flagpole, see if it flies.
Mm-hmm.
What if we do a documentary about the man who is involved with the production of Saturday Night Live? The man who basically created and gave birth to the show that is Saturday Night Live.
Wally the cue card guy?
No, the other guy.
Oh, Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, there it is. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. Yes. Next episode is coming out on Peacock. We're doing it, talking about the documentary Lorne.
Lorne, yes.
Lorne.
Big documentary all about Lorne Michaels. So we're going to watch this. The man, the myth, the legend, the mystery that is Lorne Michaels.
That's right.
This is it's put together by the guy who put together some of the 50th anniversary documentaries that debuted on Peacock last year. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, this should be interesting. Like, I'm really kind of want to see what this is all about. Lorne is notoriously kind of a bit of a private, mystical figure. Like
enigmatic. Tough to read.
Yes.
Even people in the trailer, like, they're asking various SNL cast members, is like, what do you know about Lorne's childhood? And they're like, he grew up in Canada. And Michael J. just goes, we should meet Lorne sometime.
Like, we really should.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot is known about him. Let's see if this documentary gets to find out anything about him. Directed by Morgan Neville. It's Lorne. So, yeah, we're talking all about Lorne on the next episode of SNL Nerds.
And that is coming out on Peacock this coming Friday, the 5th of June. So if you watch SNL on Peacock, you can watch this documentary on Peacock. You have no excuse.
None.
No excuse. Unless, I don't know, you don't want to watch or something.
Then, okay.
And that's fine. You do you. I mean, hey. But, yeah.
Hey, life's all about choices, man.
Exactly. You do you. But that's what we're going to do next week. We're going to be watching the new documentary, Lorne, and we're looking forward to it. So, yeah, please join us next week for that. But until then, Nerds out!
This- News has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.